Good morning. Today's Daf in Yavam of Nunches. We're here in the sixth pack of the Masechta. Our larger discussion, which we're going to come back to a little bit later on this morning, is going to be being primed for a Bia Psula. Okay, there's not a position that a woman wants to be in, meaning that she shouldn't be married to somebody that is forbidden to her. Kind of an obvious point, but unfortunately she is Mekudesha. She is now in the first stage of marriage to a man that she should not be married to. And she happens to be, I'm going to say it simply because I said it yesterday this way, and I'll continue saying it this way. Let's say she's a bas kohen, and up until this point in time, she was totally comfortable eating truma. In other words, daddy's girl, and daddy has truma, and she's eating daddy's truma. And so good. So but meanwhile, however, she elected, she made a bad decision, and she accepted kedushin from somebody she's not allowed to marry. So amana to a kohen gadol, grusha chalusa to a kohen hedjot. Okay, so now, at the point of Kedushin, is she cut off from the Truma? Machlokas Hatanayim. In the Mishnah, Rav Meir says that if she is Shomeres for a Bia Psula, so meaning Shomeres Bia Psula, meaning she's awaiting, she's primed for a Bia Psula, and the point of Kedushin is that point of being primed. So then, according to Rav Meir, that's it. She's already at that point in time cut off from the Truma. Truma de Beinasha. On the other hand, the Sheet of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar is no. That obviously poor decision, and she shouldn't have done it, but she's not cut off yet. When is she going to be cut off? When she becomes disqualified. When does she become disqualified? At the point of Bia, when she has relations with the man she's not allowed to have relations with. At that point in time now, she becomes a Chalala, and she will, Chalala, Zona, okay, we can toggle between the terms, but regardless, she will, at that point in time, become disqualified from eating Truma. But even despite the fact that she was Mekudeshes and she is primed for a Bia Psula, that in of itself is not going to cut her off from the Truma. Okay? I understand it doesn't sound like a Yavamas discussion, but here in the sixth parak of the Masechta, we're focusing a lot on Bia, meaning Bia is really the topic du jour of the sixth parak. So the Mishnah segues into this discussion. Okay. And huh? He can continue to eat truma. Yeah. Okay. 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 It's an inequality. Okay. Good. All right. Itmar. And then yesterday we touched on a really fundamental issue, and that's the following. So as I introduced yesterday, let's just do a quick introduction today. So as far as nisuin is concerned, as far as marriage, there are two parts of the marriage: there's kedushin, and then there's nisuin. As I mentioned yesterday, it's two steps, and it's two separate steps. And back in the good old days, it was separated by a year. First, you do Erisin. You and her now are married. How do you do Erisin? One of three ways. Kesef Shtarum Bia. Bia was taken off the table. Rav Mangid Amanda Mekash Bia. We just saw that recently in our Masechta here in Yavamos. Okay, so, and the Minhag Yisrael has been for generations to be Mekadosh with Kesef. Okay, so the first step of marriage is Kedushin. Now, at the point of Kedushin, you and her are husband and wife. It is not an engagement. It is marriage. If she were to commit adultery at that point in time, that's niyuv. That is adultery, subject to capital punishment. So, but at the same time, however, you don't live together. You're not financially responsible for her, and you're not intimate with her. In fact, it's the Rambam writes, and it's from kedushin to nisuin. It's an issur d'rabbanan to be intimate with her. Okay, but you're married. Okay, it's an awkward transition, but that's the transition. And then, back in the good old days, a year later, nisuin, our opening to Masechta Ksuvos, we're going to learn that there is a expectation that a year later, so you got to get your act together and you have to marry her a year later. So nisuin is the second stage of marriage, and that's where the full marriage kicks in that you're going to live together, you're going to be financially responsible for her, you are now husband and wife living in the same house together. Okay, so this is a construction of a marriage. That second stage of marriage. So we're going to call it chuppah, because the Gemara calls it chuppah, and you can call it nisuin, but we're going to call it chuppah. Now, what exactly is chuppah? Meaning, what is the actual mechanism of chuppah? That's not clear. Meaning, when it comes to kedushin, it's unbelievably clear what kedushin is, right? The Mishnah goes with precision in terms of, it's either going to be kesef or it's going to be shtar, it's going to be bia. In terms of the kesef, how much kesef are we talking about? And there are numerous sugyas in the beginning of kedushin that really gives definition and clarity to what kedushin is. What's Nisuin? it's really opaque. Meaning it's something, obviously. It's the second stage of marriage and the financial obligations kick in, but what is it? What's the mechanism of chuppah? Not super clear. So the Rambam writes that the mechanism of chuppah is yichud. Okay? Others are of the opinion that it's being under canopy together. Others are of the opinion what you bring into your house. Others are of the opinion that when you put the what's it called? When you put the veil over her. Okay, so there are numerous interpretations, suggestions in terms of what exactly chuppah is. For our purposes today, we're just going to call it chuppah. Okay, because it makes the discussion really easy and really streamlined. Okay, and what if? What if you do chuppah without kiddushin? So first of all, it's weird. I know that's not a halachic comment, but in other words, that's not the prescribed order. The prescribed order is first kiddushin and then chuppah. That's the prescribed order. But what if you do chuppah by itself? Is it going to have significance, yes or no? Machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav, this is what we saw yesterday, and this is the very top of Nizayin Amid Beis. Rav says, yesh chuppah lepsulos. So Rav is of the position that if you do chuppah, and I'm going to learn the Gemara like I did yesterday, and I'm going to follow Rashi, and that we're just talking about chuppah by itself. You didn't do kiddushin, you jump right to chuppah. So you did chuppah, and we're discussing it in our context, meaning at that point in time, are you primed for a bia psula? So Rav's of the position, yeah, yesh chuppah lepsulos. Chuppah by itself is going to be marriage-like. Rashi writes, I read this Rashi yesterday. I'm going to read it again because it's really critical for our discussion. First Rashi on the Amud Beis. So an Amana is marrying a Kohen Gadol and he takes her to the Chuppah, but Bia has not occurred yet. Now, of course, Rashi has to say that because remember, once they had Bia together, that's it, game over. Meaning Bia is going to apostle her, and there's nothing to litigate over there. What we are describing right now, what we're discussing is just Chuppah by itself. So, and again, Rashi writes over here that there was no kiddushin. But let's say she was a bas kohen. That's it. From the point chuppah going forward, she's going to be DQ'd. She'll be disqualified from the truma. And here are the keywords of Rashi. I underlined it. The chuppah kiknisas beila damya. Because as far as chuppah is concerned, chuppah is kiknisas beila. It's tantamount. It's equivalent to having relations with her, okay? Which, by the way, according to Rashi, clearly, chuppah is not relations, but it's the second step of marriage. Whatever it is, however you may describe it, but in other words, it's equivalent to Bia. And as a result of that, she is going to be, she'll be disqualified from meeting Truma. That Shitas Rav. Shmuel's of the position that no. Shmuel says that the Ein Chuppah Lepsulos, that chuppah by itself, is not going to be significant. Now, I say not going to be significant. Do I mean that as an absolute? I don't know. But I certainly mean it in the context of the Gemara. Meaning in the context of the Gemara, is it going to disqualify from the Truma? No. Okay, good. So it's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, exactly whether Chuppah by itself has any kind of significance. Rav says it does, Shmuel says it doesn't, and we continue. So there we are right now, having the general overview of what we're discussing, and the specific machlokes of Rav and Shmuel, and now we continue. Amar Rami Bar Chama. So we find ourselves on Nun Zayin Amud Beis. That's a 9-minute introduction. We find ourselves on the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. Amar Rami Bar Chama. Yesh chuppah lepsulos banal machlokas Rav Meir Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon. So Rami Bar Chama says, so let's do this. Let's take the machlokas Amarayim. Let's plug it into the machlokas Atanayim. Right? It seems to be that Rav and Shmuel are on the same divide, on the same fault line of the machlokas in our Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rebbe Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. Le Rebbe Meir, Damer Kedushin Pasle, Chuppah Nami Pasla. Le Rebbe Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Damer Kedushin Lo Pasla, Chuppah Nami Lo Pasla. And so what it seems like is that we're basically looking at the same achlokas, right? Where Rav is of the position that Chuppah by itself is significant, disqualifying her from Truma. Again, if the Chuppah is with a man that she's not allowed to be Chuppahed with, and similarly, Rebbe Meir is the same. Rebbe Meir says is that when a woman is accepting Kedushin from a man that she shouldn't have accepted kedushin from, So at that point in time, she's primed for a Bia Psula, and she's going to be disqualified. So we'll take Rav, and we'll put him with Rav Meir, and we'll take Shmuel, and we'll put him with Reb Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Sounds good, right? The Gemara says maybe not. Umi Mai. Dilma, the Gemara says, let's untangle, let's decouple. Maybe the two machloksim are not going side by side. So umi mai domad kan lo kamer Reb Meir hasam ala begedushin de kanila avachupa de lo kanila lo. So it could very well be that Reb Meir will make the following distinction. Look, when you accept kedushin, that's a kinyan. That's a formal acquisition. You and her now, you have done a maisa kinyan with her. Chupa, on the other hand, is not a kinyan. Now it's easy to say what it's not. What is chupa? That's tough. It's really the description and discussion and definition of chuppah is a really difficult topic. But it's not a kinyan. Correct. Meaning it's something, but it's not a kinyan.
No. Why is it so ambiguous? That's what it is, if it's the right.
Okay. Just awkward pause and right. Good. It's a good question. And right now I don't have an easy way to articulate an answer. Okay, so a really easy way to distinguish between kedushin and chuppah. Kedushin's a kinyan, chuppah's not a kinyan. So Reb Meir is not going to necessarily have to agree to Rav. And in amayad kan lo kamer Reb Elazar Reb Shimon hasam ala bekedushin de lo kriv labia. Ava chuppah de kriv labia hachinam de pasla. And as far as Shmuel's concerned, so you can go the other direction. In that Reb Elazar and Reb Shimon say that if you accept kedushin from a man you shouldn't have, so you're not going to be disqualified. Yeah, but at the point of kedushin, you're not primed for a Bia Psula. Now I say that knowing, of course you are. In other words, you just accepted kedushin from a man you're not allowed to be with. But as far as the Bia is concerned, you're not craver. You're not closer. In that, again, I'll go back to the good old days. There was a year interval. And as I pointed out also earlier in the introduction, you're not allowed to have bia with her during the kedushin period. So you're not kriva labia. On the other hand, chuppah, what do you do with chuppah? Chuppah goes into bia. So chuppah is much closer to bia. So I can make an argument that for Reb Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who say that a kedushin is not going to disqualify her, but chuppah, which is kriva labia, for sure is going to disqualify her. So ela iikal amemer bepukta dahani tanai detanya. So the Gemara says, okay, so scratch that thought. We thought that the machlokas Rav and Shmuel is running along the same machlokas as Rebbe Man, Reb Elazar, Rebbe Shimon of our Mishnah. Gemara says not necessarily. So now with the not necessarily, so here we go. We're going to try to take out another machlokas Tanayim and see if Rav and Shmuel can fit into this machlokas Tanayim. Detanya will enter a brisa nisu zuvazu ksheres apsulos a man a kohen married women and ksheres apsulos. He was qualified to marry. Some he was disqualified to marry. But okay, he wasn't particularly selective. He married both. Ocean nichnasu lechuppah, and he took her to the chuppah v'lo nivalu. However, he didn't have bia with her yet. Ochlos mishlova, ochlos betruma. But once he took her into the chuppah, now she's allowed to eat truma. Okay. The Bryce is a little choppy, and the Gemara immediately cleans it up. Nichnasu mechlal denisu nisu mamish. Well, it sounds like. Look how many verbs there are in the Braisa. Nisu and Nichnasu. Well, Nichnasu means, well, they went to the chuppah. Nisu sounds like, yeah, and they consummated the marriage. Whoa. We can't be talking about consummating the marriage because in this context, we want to learn a chiddush. If they consummated the marriage and now she's allowed to eat truma, well, that's not a chiddush. The chiddush has to be that we're just looking at chuppah by itself. So, Ella, lav kigon, should Nichnasu the chuppah, velo nivalu. And as Rashi points out over here, Perusha kamafarish, meaning the Braisa is just giving one singular case. It's one point, even though it's multiple verbs, but it's all one case. And the case is that he married her with chuppah, but they haven't yet had bia. And the chiddush of the Braisa is she's now entitled to eat truma. Viktani ochlos mishlova ochlos b'truma. So the author of this Braisa is teaching us chuppah significant. How significant is chuppah? She's allowed to eat truma at the point of chuppah. Okay, so. This brisa now we're going to put on the balance sheet of Rav, meaning chuppah is a thing. Chuppah is significant. And then we have another brisa, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Kol shebiasa ma'achilasa, chuppasa ma'achilasa, v'chol shein biasa ma'achilasa, in chuppasa ma'achilasa. Well, if he had relations with her, enabling her to eat truma. So if they have chuppah with her, it will be enabled to eat truma. But if the bia can't have her eating truma, neither can the chuppah as well. Okay, mimai. So the Gemara says like this. So we have now in this brisa the shita of Rabbi Shmuel, benosho Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who's of the position that chuppah, psula, is not significant. So mimai. So the Gemara says, okay, I don't know. I don't know if this machlokus is Rav and Shmuel. Dilma Rabbi Shmuel benosho Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, kareb meir svirle, damer kiddusha lo achla. So how do I know that Rabbi Shmuel is in alignment with Rabbi Meir, that kiddushin lo achla? So hi kol she'en biyasa ma'achilasa in chupasa ma'achilasa, kol she'en biyasa ma'achilasa in kaspa ma'achilasa. You want to tell me that Rabbi Shmuel is in line with Rabbi Meir? I don't know. If Rabbi Shmuel was in line with Rabbi Meir, so why is he focusing on chuppah? Rabbi Meir is focusing on the kiddushin. So don't focus, the language of Rabbi Shmuel is the chuppah. Well, Rabbi Meir is talking about kiddushin. So the Gemara says, I'm Ibaile. That's what it should have said. So Dilma, I did it. Amr Tanakama Chuppah, Amr Iunami Chuppah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Tanakama was talking about Chuppah. He was talking about Chuppah as well, but what he really meant was Kiddushin. Okay. Fine. We're done. Meaning, we're done. We're not done. Meaning, there's obviously much more to go. There's much more analysis that could be done. But in terms of the Sugya on the Gemara, from a Daf Yomi perspective, we are done with the Sugya of whether or not chuppah by itself is significant. And again, that's according to Rashi. Right? I said over the Gemara yesterday and today, like Rashi, it's not the only way to say it over, but for the Daf Yomi purposes, it's an approach, it's Rashi, we're finished. Rashi is of the position that chuppah by itself, is it significant, yes or no? It's a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. According to Rav, chuppah by itself is significant. According to Shmuel, chuppah by itself is not significant. And we're discussing in the context of whether or not you do chuppah with a man you shouldn't have done chuppah with, so are you at that point in time going to be disqualified from eating truma? I.e., you were a bas kohen, you were eating daddy's truma, and now you had chuppah from a puzzle. Is that by itself going to be significant? Rav says yes. Shmuel says no. Okay, the Rambam passes like Rav that yes, it's going to be the chuppah by itself is going to be significant. Okay, next topic of discussion. Amar of Amram Hamilsa Amar Rav Sheshes Vanir La'Neim Emasnisan. Now, I do take it back a little bit. We're going to just, for another moment, more than a moment, entertain the Shita of Rav. We're going to try to prove it from a Mishnah. In fact, the Gemara says that Rav Amram tells us that Rav Sheshes said something and used a Mishnah to make the point, which is, Chuppah by itself is in fact significant, Vitanatuna, and we have the following Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Sota. Okay, so I feel like the last couple of days, we've been delving into the world of Sota. So again, just a brief background. So a woman commits adultery where there are witnesses who saw it. So she is subject to capital punishment. And if they didn't warn her, so she is the sota, meaning she committed adultery. Now the word sota over here gets a little bit confusing because we're using sota in two contexts. So the context that I just described, sota vadais, meaning we know she committed adultery. For whatever reason, she wasn't executed, but she's a sota. That in of itself does not terminate the marriage. The husband is going to need to divorce her. The husband's prohibited from being with her. Once she committed znus, once she committed the act of adultery, asulabal, she's forbidden to her husband. She's forbidden to the paramour. Anyway, but that is one version of sota. The other version of sota, the one that we're more used to, is the sota in which the husband warned his wife. That warning is important. That's a halachic prerequisite. He warned her, I see you talking to that man. I do not want you talking to that man. But talking meaning I don't want you to seclude yourself with that man. Don't do that. And then she does. So, there are witnesses that saw it. The first Mishnah in Sota. How many witnesses are needed for the warning? How many witnesses are needed for the seclusion? Okay, good. I'm not going to go through the Mishnah right now, but there are two steps to this Sota. Now, the Gemara uses the term Sota Safek. Why Sota Safek? We don't know what happened in the room. Now, we have a pretty good idea of what happened in the room, but we don't know. There was no witnesses who saw the act of adultery. But raglaim ladavar, that's the Gemara's terminology back in Sota. There's a good amount of circumstantial evidence that would indicate that she committed adultery. However, what to do over here in that we don't know she committed Sota, so the Torah gives us now the following prescription. And this we all know. And she's taken to the base of Mikdash, there she drinks the mesota. If she did not commit adultery, good. If she did commit adultery, not good. Okay, and as far as the rest of the story, I assume the listener knows, and let's move on. So, when she goes to the Beis HaMikdash, and right before she drinks the water, so now, a shvua. She's going to make an oath. And that oath is, I did not commit adultery. I swear I didn't commit adultery. Okay. And then, she, the Kohanim are there. They're the ones who are going to formulate the shvua, and she'll say the word amen. Actually, she'll say, amen, the amen. She'll say, yep, I'm down with that. Right? That shvua, I'm taking it on me. Now, the amen, the multiple amen, what is that coming to teach us? So that's where we are. That's the Mishnah we're learning together. Amen shelo satiti arusa v'nesura shemeres yavam u'kenusa. So I did not commit adultery. I did not commit adultery after nesuin. I didn't commit adultery during erusin. I didn't commit adultery during shemeres yavam. I didn't commit adultery even after shemeres yavam, meaning after the yavam did the mitzvah v'yibum. Now, she is now fessing up to not having committed adultery basically during her entire married life. Now, the Gemara points out, now here's where it's going to get a little bit tricky. Okay. Hayarusa Hechidami. Now, as part of her agreement and her shvua, so she is now making an oath that she did not commit adultery during Erison. Clarification? Where are we right now? In their marriage. So the Gemara says, what happened? They went through Erusin, and again, like I said earlier this morning, they're married. Okay, they don't live together, but they're married. Now, if let's say she's with another man, and again, in the construct of there was a warning and there was seclusion, kinu in stira. So if she was with another man, so is he take her to the Beis HaMikdash? Does she drink the mesota? The answer is no, she does not. Tanan, Arusa v'shemeres yavam lo shosos v'lo no los ksuva. And Arusa and Shemeres yavam do not drink the mesota. And Rashi points out the reason why is because of the pasuk in the Torah. Pasuk in the Torah says, tachas isheich. In other words, you have to be a fully wedded woman in order to be eligible to drink the mesota. So during Arusin, it's a technicality, but still, doesn't matter. She doesn't drink the mesota. Now, in her inability to drink the mesota, what happens? I'll tell you what happens. He's going to divorce her, and she also forfeited her ksuva. We don't know she committed adultery. Yeah, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. So she forfeits her ksuva.
She doesn't swear either, right?
In other words, there's no Beis HaMikdash. There's no Beis HaMikdash moment. In other words, the marriage just simply terminates. Terminates meaning he has to divorce her. Okay, and she forfeits her ksuva. Ela dekani lakishi arusa v'istatra v'kamashka lakishi nesua. So the Gemara says, okay, so here must be the timeline. The timeline is that they did Erison. Then he sees her talking with another man. He says, don't do that. And then she secludes herself with that man. And then he goes to the second stage of marriage, Nisuin. Okay? If he seeks advisement, obviously, right, somebody who knows what they're talking about would say, don't do it. Okay, but he did it. He went and then he did Nisuin. And after Nisuin, now he's like, you know what? Right? Remember, I warned you not to be with that man, and you were with that man during Erusin. Let's go to the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, at this point in time, you can't go to the Beis HaMikdash. So, mi bad kalamai v'atanya v'nika ish me'avon, bizman she ish menukam me'avon, amayim botkin es ishto. Ein ish menukam me'avon, ein amayim botkin es ishto. A basic prerequisite in order for the mesota to work. For the mesota to work, the husband's got to be clean. Okay. Now, when I say clean, right, meaning he can't have any chataim. It can't have any sins. Now, no one's perfect. What we mean to say is that the husband cannot have had an illicit relations with her. What's an illicit relations? It's very simple. After she is a sota, suffix sota, with a kinui, with a stira, he's not allowed to be with her. Again, we don't know she committed adultery, but at that point in time, she has the status of a sota. And the next time they can have relations with her lawfully is only after they go to the Beis HaMikdash and after she drinks the mesota. And I'll add, she didn't blow up. Okay. So at that point in time, she is now a sota. So if during Erusin he warned her and she's secluded and then he marries her in the second stage, So then now he's not free of chait. He's not minuka. So the mesota is simply not going to work. In other words, the Beis HaMikdash is going to ask, well, what happened? And he tells them the following story that we just went over. So the Kohanim are going to say, sorry, go home. Right? In other words, the mesota is simply not going to work. So Ella. Dekanila kishi arusa. So the Gemara says, okay. So here now is how we're going to construct the scenario. Dekanila kishi arusa v'istachu v'nichnas alachupa v'lo nivala. Ah. So here's how it must have gone down. It must have gone down that there was kinu and stira while she was in arusa. And then he took her and he performed chuppah with her. Ah, but no bia. Ah, now he's clean. And they're married. And that's what the Bryce is describing. Ushmamina yesh chuppah lepsulos. Ah. And now what did we just learn together? That the chuppah is significant. Chuppah with a woman that he wasn't allowed to marry. Ah, but the chuppah by itself is significant. Ah, okay. So we have just put together, we just formulated a scenario. Granted, unbelievably unlikely, but it doesn't matter. In other words, there's a plausible scenario to show us that chuppah by itself is significant. Amarava v'tizbara daham mitaretz dahi. So Rava says, I don't think the brisa is a good brisa. It's a corrupted brisa. How do I know that? Because consider now, the following brisa was brought from the south. The Gemara notes over here, we have the following basic prerequisite. In order to be eligible for the mesota, the woman has to have first been with her husband, and then alleged to be with another man. Meaning, if the allegations of being with another man preceded the husband's intimacy with her, there simply is no eligibility for the mesota. Oh. So now if that's the case, so then what are you talking about over here? Well, he did chuppah with her, but he hasn't had bia with her. In other words, at that point in time, there's no eligibility for mesota. The only time there's eligibility is when he first is with her intimately, and then allegations about another man. So the Gemara says, oh, so we're now stuck. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, meaning we're going to try to resuscitate the case. Again, what happened is he did Erison with her. Now, as I already pointed out, during Erison, they don't live together. And they're not allowed to be with one another, midrabanan. Okay, we know that. He visited her, a visitation. Okay, he stopped by his in-law's house. He visited his wife, his arusa. And not only did he have a visitation, but he also had a visitation. Okay. Now, right? Not perfectly up and up, but that's what happened. And now, if that's in fact the case, so now we can construct our timeline. Okay. And I know this is a really choppy timeline, but he did Erison with her. And then she's talking to another man. He warns her not to do so. And she secludes herself with that other man. I skipped a step. He does Erison with her. Then he has a visitation with her while she's in Arusa. And they're intimate during that visitation. And then the Kino and Stira with another man. And then, right. And then they have Chuppah. But the Chuppah is without a Bia because the Chuppah has to be without a Bia. Why? Because again, once he has Bia after the allegations, so then the Maimer are not going to be Bodek. Okay, so that's the timeline. Oh, that's a lot. So the Gemara says, even as we're here, Kavasega b'shemur yavam shabala yavam beveis chamia. So the Gemara says, remember in the Mishnah and Sota, we learned together that Mishnah was right under the middle of the Amud. So amen shalosha tisi arusa unesuah shemur yavam mukunusa. So now, the case that we just constructed for the Arusa, we have to have a parallel case to the Shomeres Yavam. There is no parallel case for the Shomeres Yavam, as the Gemara is about to point out. Shomeres Yavam, we're on the top of the Amud Beis. Shomeres Yavam, Karisa Leishto Ma'al Yahi. If there is a visitation to your Shomeres Yavam, do you know what you call her? You call her your wife, right? Remember? And by Shomeres Yavam, Bia is the means in which you're kona her. So that's it. Meaning, once you have a visitation, right, by an Arusa, you have a visitation, she's still an Arusa. By a Shomeres Yavam, you have a visitation, she's called your wife now.
Why
No. No, you need it. Right. Very good. Danny, you're saying it good. I also don't know exactly know what that means, but you're saying it correctly. Correct. You need chuppah. Absolutely correct. So Shemar Yosef and Karisa La Ishta Ma'ayahi. Da'am Rav Kana L'Kol. And remember, in the beginning here of the sixth parak, we had the following deliberation. In other words, it is not the best bia. It is not bia on the up and up. Don't matter. When it comes to a bia psula, Rav's of the position, I said bia psula. I'd like to edit. A bia grua. It's an inferior bia. Don't matter. According to Rav, a bia grua is kona l'kol. In other words, she's your wife. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true. But remember what Shmuel said? Kishmuel da'amar lo kana elo dvar ma'amor beparsha. Well, there is the sheet of Shmuel, and Shmuel's of the position that a bia grua only works for yibum halachas, right? The yerusha of his brother, the lack of a need of chalitza from that point going forward. But in other words, if it doesn't make, according to Shmuel, it doesn't make her your full wife with all statuses of a wife. So the Gemara says, "Me have a time El Rav." The Gemara says, "Okay, good. That's the opinion of Shmuel. We're not talking about Shmuel right now. We're talking about Rav. Meaning Yesh Chuppah L'Psulos, which is our larger discussion. That's Rav's opinion. So you want to tell me now? Yeah, but according to Shmuel, it's not a full Kenyan. That's wonderful. We're talking about Rav right now. Rav's of the position that Bia by Shomeres Yavam, even if it's absent any kind of kavana, it don't matter. It makes her and you fully husband and wife." So ha marav kana l'kol. Okay, so hacha b'maiskin and kagon. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to keep trying. Meaning, we have this Mishnah in Sota. The Mishnah in Sota is describing how there can be, as part of the Shvua, there can be where she's going to swear that I didn't commit adultery during Shomer Yavam. What are we talking about? So, kagon da'ava b'maimer u'beishamahi. So maybe the Mishnah in Sota is where you did Maimer, and we're going to go like the Shita of Beis Shammai. Like the Shita of Beis Shammai, Damri Maimer, Kona, Kinyan, Gamor. So already this Shita we've seen a number of times in our Masechta, and here we get to say it again. And that is for Beis Shammai, Maimer is really significant. It makes a full Kinyan. So at that point in time, what is happening over here is that from the point of Maimer going forward, she now is like an Arusa. She has the status of an arusa. So the Gemara says, Ihachi haino arusa. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but then the Brisa is just redundant. The Brisa says, right, I didn't have an adulterous affair during Erisin. I didn't have an adulterous affair during Shomeres Yavam. And again, now we're qualifying. Shomeres Yavam means once Maimer was done, and we're going like the Shita Beis Shammai. But Maimer being done according to the Shita Beis Shammai is Arusin, it's Arusin. Hainuach, it's the same thing. So the Gemara says that, then of itself, doesn't bother me so much. Olatamech nesua, kenusa, lav chadamilsehi. As the Gemara says, yeah, but you go back to the Brisa, read the Brisa again. There's kenusa, there's nesua. Those are synonymous terms. So ala nesua dide, kenusa de chavre, hachanami, arusa dide, shomer siavam de chavre. In the context of the Brisa, that's not so difficult. Because when we're using the word Arusin and we're using the word shomer siavam, Erisin is for the husband, Shomer Yavam is for the brother-in-law. And when we use the word Kenusa and we use the word Nesua, Nesua is for the husband, Kenusa is for the brother-in-law who is performing the mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, so the Gemara says the redundant language doesn't really bother me so much. So that is the end of a really long sentence. So we want the Mishnah and Sota to be to be good evidence for Rav. Rav says that Chuppah by itself is significant. The Mishnah and Sota proves it. Now when I say proves it, whoa, that's a mouthful. How does it prove it? Because as part of a shvua, she swore that she didn't commit adultery during Erisin. Well, how did we get here? How can she be in the Beis HaMikdash, about to drink the Mesota, and what, she committed adultery? The allegation she committed adultery during Erisin? How could that be? So now, here's how it's going to go. It's going to go where he did Erisin with her, then he visited her. So with that visitation now, his bia was kodemus to any other possible man. Then rumors and allegations with a formal kino and stira during Erisin. Then they went to the chuppah, but all they did was the chuppah. He didn't have bia with her. So now he's not menukami avon. And then he takes her to the Beis HaMikdash. That's a mouthful. That's a real mouthful. But assuming all that, so now we have a proof for Rav. But may I underline the last sentence? Assuming all that. That's a lot. In order to make a proof for Rav. But, so what the Gemara now is going to do now is make other suggestions than Mishnah and Sota. Meaning, there are other ways to explain the Mishnah and Sota, and we do not have to have this kind of constructed scenario. Rav Papa Amar Haitana Hu Detanya. The Gemara says that it could very well be that the author of the Brisa, the author of the Mishnah, is the following Brisa. Ein mekana la larusa lashkosa kishi arusa, ava mekana osa lashkosa kishi nesua. So the kinui can be done, not during erusin, but during nesuin. As Rashi over here explains, Rashi struggles a little bit with this. He has a couple of lashonos, but the lashon that he favors is that the author of this Brisa is of the position that the halacha that we learned previously, where he had to have been with her before the alleged paramour, right? In order for that is a prerequisite for the mesota. This Brisa doesn't agree with that. This Brisa is of the position that if there were rumors and allegations and there was a warning and seclusion during erusin, okay. So during erusin, he can't take her to the Beis Hamikdash because again, tachas yisheich. Okay, so then after marriage, meaning after nisuin, we're going to have to add that he didn't have bia with her, because if he had bia with her, then he's not menukam yavon, and then the word is not going to be a good litmus test. Okay, but in other words, but it could very well be that the requirement of his bia has to be before the paramour's bia. This Bryce doesn't subscribe to that. Okay, that's Rashi's preferred way to explain the Gemara over here. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Al Yedei Gilgul. And then the Gemara simply gives a really simple way to explain the Mishnah. But using a very big concept called Gilgul Shvuah. Gilgul Shvuah. Once you put a person in a position where they have to make a Shvuah, meaning there are three Shvuahs min HaTorah, I'm not going to go through it all right now. Once you put a person in a position that they have to make a Shvuah, at that point in time, you can roll more Shvuahs on them. This is the idea of Gilgul Shvuah. So over here, we're talking about a scenario in which there was a warning and there was a seclusion. And it was after Nisuin. So then when the Mishnah says, and she's also swearing that she didn't commit adultery during Erusin, yeah, Al Yedei Gilgul. Meaning, once the first Shvuah now, which is a totally sanctioned Shvuah, once that's in place, so then what you could do is, hey, let's extend it. You're totally permitted to do that. That's the principle of Gilgul Shvuah. So the easiest way to explain the Mishnah is without getting onto that really complicated timeline that we've been working on for the last 10 minutes. It's just simply to say that the additional Shvuahs that she's making is operating through Gilgul. Period. Okay. We're almost done. We have a little bit more to go to finish off the daf. Shalach Rav Chanina Mishmei Rav Yochanan Osa Maim Rabbi Vimto V'Yeshal Ach Afilu Hu Kohen V'Hi Kohen Es Psula Mina Truma. Okay, so let's reset our discussion, our larger discussion, which started yesterday. And it really started, we started it yesterday. It's the Mishnah Nun Vav Amud Beis. A woman is primed for a Bia Psula. Okay, she accepted kedushin from a man that she shouldn't have married, but she accepted kedushin from him. And let's say she was a Bas Kohen. So Machlokis in the Mishnah, Reb Meir and Reb Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, as to whether or not at this point in time is she going to be disqualified from eating the truma, daddy's truma. So Reb Meir says yes, meaning she is primed for a bia psula. Now she's going to be disqualified from eating truma. And Reb Elazar and Rabbi Shimon are of the position though. In other words, even though you're primed for a bia psula, your disqualification will come only at the point of the actual bia itself. Okay, now. The Gemara is going to be discussing and litigating the following. Let's say a woman is primed for a bia psula, but the bia psula is an isur derabanan, meaning amana kohen gadol, grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hajor, those are isur daraisa. Now, I say that knowing that chalutza is not an isur daraisa. Okay. I'm going to, just for our purposes right now, I'll ignore that last point. Okay. And now, we're going to be discussing what if the woman is prime for a bia psula, but midrabanan. Now, the first case over here is gonna be really tricky. It's gonna be a little bit difficult. Not difficult to understand, just difficult to really process. We're talking about Cohen and his sister-in-law, who also happens to be a Bas Cohen, right? Osa Maimer Biavimto. Let me start again. Shalach Rav Nachman Mishmei de Rav Yochanan Osa Maimer Biavimto Vyeshlo Ach. Afilu Hu Cohen Vi Cohenes. So, everyone's a Cohen, right? The original husband and married her is a Cohen. The brother's a Cohen. That's an obvious point. In other words, in order to perform Yibum, you have to be a brother, a paternal brother. Okay. So, the Yavam is a Cohen. And she happens to be a Cohenes. But because now there's another brother, and once Mimer is done, so now what? So we know that once Mimer is done, the other brother no longer becomes eligible to do Yibum with her. So, Pasla min a Truma. The Gemara is going to try to make the argument now that she can't eat Truma. Why? So why? Because once she did Mimer with one of the brothers, that will, midrabanan, disqualify her from having Yibum done with the other brother. She's considered a woman who underwent Mimer. What?
Didn't we discuss Mimer has a Kedushin?
Yeah, correct. It has a Kedushin element to it. And she's considered, Eshesach is not the right terminology, but in other words, she's betrothed to the brother who did Mimer with her. And the other brother now is ineligible. But ineligibility over here on a Torah level? No. Mimer does not work on a Doraisa level. Now, I know moments earlier this morning, I know this can get a little bit confusing. Moments earlier this morning, we said Mimer's Kona Kinyan Gomer. Yeah, but that's according to Beit Shammai. And we're right now, we left Beit Shammai, right? We're back to Mimer being a Din D'Rabbanan. Okay, so, Laman Ilam Reb Meir Madama Reb Meir Mishdamer Slabi Apsula Loach Lemi Doraisa D'Rabbanan Miamar. So the Gemara says, look, the disqualification over here to the other brother is a Din D'Rabbanan. That's not going to disqualify her from Truma. And according to Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, the discussion doesn't even start. They say that a Shomer Labia Psula, a woman primed for a Bia Psula Daraisa, is not yet disqualified from Truma. Over here, it's a Bia Psula Midrabanan. The discussion doesn't even get off the ground. Ella. Kiyasa Ravin Amar Asaba Maimer Biavimto Divra Kol Achla Yeshla Ach Chalal Divra Kol Eina Ocheles. Let's say that there is a brother. In other words, there are two brothers that are surviving, and one of them is a kasher and the other is a chalal. How is that possible? Really simple. They're two different mothers. Okay, so one brother is a kasher kohen, the other brother is a chalal kohen. Now that under those circumstances. Now she is a shomer lebia psula. So lo nechlugu ela shenasan la get. The Gemara says, I'll tell you where we're going to have a debate. We're going to have a debate where one of the brothers, both of them are eligible, one of the brothers issued a get. Okay, now this takes us back to the fifth parak. Okay? And where does get belong in the Yibam storyline? It doesn't. Right. But as we learned in the fifth parak extensively, because fifth parak is only three blot of Gemara. But boy, was that a difficult perek. And in that perek, we learned together that a get that's issued is going to have rabbinic significance. And at the beginning of that fifth perek, we learned why it has significance because of the confusion between get and chalitza. Okay, so anyway, the get by itself has significance. But mid rabbanan. So now, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ocheles Reish Lakish Amar Ein Ocheles. So Rabbi Yochanan says that she was issued a get, so she is rabbinically prohibited, but it doesn't disqualify her from Truma. Assuming she's a Bas Kohen. And Reish Lakish says, no, she cannot eat Truma. So Rav Yochanan Amar Ocheles Afilu Rav Meir Damrei No Ocheles Hani Milim Hashem Eretz Labi Yepsula Daraisa. Aval Derabanan Achla. And Rav Yochanan will simply say, look, I know the Shita Rav Meir, who says that a woman primed for a Bia Psula Daraisa is disqualified from Truma. Our woman over here is primed for a Bia Psula Midrabanan. So, and according to Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, who says, Ocheles, and that's talking about where our Kohen, meaning in the Mishnah, going all the way back to the Mishnah, the Kohen can't marry this woman. Kohen has got a lot of eligible women that he's allowed to marry. In other words, he can marry most women and provide for them Truma. But over here, if the brother's a halal, there simply is, the halal cannot afford her to eat truma, the halal cannot afford anyone to eat truma. So the Gemara says, wait one second. If she goes back to her father's house, meaning once there's a full severance of the Yibum, he gives her chalitza, so now she's allowed to go back and eat truma. The Gemara says, that's great. Choseres paska minei, ukrova lebeinasha. Yeah, exactly. In other words, once he does chalitza with her, and when she goes back to her father's house, that's because it cuts off totally, it severs his relationship with her. And therefore she goes back to her father to eat her father's truma. Avaha agidube. But over here, during the period, during the state of Shomeres Yavam, she is tied to him, there's a zika to him, he's a chalal, and therefore, she will not be able to eat truma. Okay, adkan. All right, let's quickly recap our daf today. First discussion today was yesh chupa lepsula, yesh ein chupa lepsula. And again, a really big discussion, which I simplified and really consolidated. Just giving over Rashi's understanding. Is chupa by itself, without kedushin, is it significant, yes or no? Machlok is between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says it's significant. Shmuel says it's not significant. Now, we're discussing in the context of it's significant in that if she did chuppah with a man that she was prohibited from doing chuppah with, so by itself, no kedushin, just chuppah, so according to Rav, that's going to disqualify her from truma. She is now kikenusa, she's like, it's Rashi's language. Chuppah kikenisas bi'ila damya. It is equivalent to actually having bia. In other words, it's not bia, but it's equivalent to having bia. That's the shita of Rav. And what we did this morning is we took this machlokas of Rav and Shmuel and we tried to plug it into our Mishnah. Isn't it the same machlokas of Rav Meir and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah? Gemara says no. No, it's not. The Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon are litigating Kedushin. Kedushin and Chuppah are not the same. Okay, and the Gemara noted it. The Gemara suggested maybe it falls along another machlokas Tanaim. Maybe. Gemara ends it off. And then on the Amud Aleph, in the second half of Amud Aleph of today, we went over a Mishnah Sota, where as part of the Shvuah of the Sota, not only did I not commit adultery during our marriage, Nisuin, I didn't commit adultery during Erusin as well. What, right? What happened? How is she making such a Shvuah? So what the Gemara endeavored to do, and this was admittedly complicated, is create a timeline and scenario in which there was Erusin and he had a visitation by her, and then she was with another man. She secluded herself with the other man after having received a warning not to be with that man. And then the husband went and took her and did chuppah with her, but didn't have bia with her. Okay, a really long, elaborate timeline. But the upshot of it all is that chuppah was done. Chuppah by itself is significant, even without bia. Right? That's what the Mishnah seems to indicate. The Gemara says, yeah, I'll tell you what, we can look at that Mishnah and we can give a couple of other interpretations of that Mishnah. And to conclude, the Gemara said, the Mishnah is just simply teaching us Gilgul Shavua. In other words, the warning and the seclusion took place during Nisuin, meaning as is normally the case by a Sota. And as far as her swearing that she didn't commit, she didn't commit adultery during Erusin, yeah, Gilgul Shavua. Okay. That's the upshot. And then finally, the last part of today's daf, what we discussed is whether or not a shomer's bia psula derabanan, a woman primed for a bia psula, but on a derabanan level, is that going to disqualify her from truma? And the answer is no. In other words, a shomer's bia psula daraisa is going to disqualify her from truma, but not shomer's bia psula derabanan. Okay, adkan.